He's the Lisan Al Gaib. Welcome to Primary Technology, the podcast about the tech news that matters. This week, even bigger changes to the App Store and Apple in the EU. TikTok might be close to getting banned or have to be sold here in the US. Some AI news, especially a weirdly Photoshopped photo of the royal family. And we'll have a grab bag of topics at the end. This episode is brought to you by you, the members who support us directly. I'm one of your hosts, Stephen Robles, and joining me as always is my friend Jason Aiton. How's it going, Jason?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm sorry. I did the Lisan Al Gaib thing because I just been loving the memes. And I see a lot of those memes on TikTok, ironically, which we should talk about later.
The only ones I see, ironically, are the ones that you post. I can tell how much you love them. Which is it's a Dune 2 reference, right? Just in case anyone here has no idea what you're talking about. Okay.
It's a Dune 2 reference. At least Al Gaib was in the first one, but the memes are really coming from Dune 2. And we're going to have to talk about TikTok in a little bit because you are staunchly against the use of TikTok, it seems like, but I am not.
I don't know if staunchly, but I don't use it and I don't let my kids use it. So there you go.
You just banned it from
staunchly,
the house.
Yeah.
Not that you're against it.
They may ban it from the US. It's already been banned from our house. So it doesn't matter to me at all.
Okay. We're going to get into that because it's interesting there. We have some 5-star review shout outs real quick before we do that. I want to thank you all. We did pass the 500 subscribers on YouTube. So thank you all for doing that. If you haven't yet, go ahead and subscribe to that YouTube channel. We have a great video version over there. I share short form clips during the week. And we were back into the top 50 tech shows in Apple Podcasts last week. So thank you guys for that. And so now, kind of asking everyone, you did 5-star reviews, you subscribed to the YouTube channel. And so now we ask you just spread the word. Tell everybody Primary Technology is the tech podcast they should be listening to if they enjoy that kind of content. And 4 5-star reviews this week. Forgive me if I mispronounce this name. It's I don't know how to say it. It's just a bunch of random letters. Thank you for your 5-star review. Sean Hudgens, battery percentage on. People are still leaving that in the reviews. That's fine. You can keep doing that. Yeah. Nicholas Bridle, he wrote a significant review. His very kind words. Thank you. Battery percentage on, Apple Maps user, of course. But our final 5-star review this episode was on my team. CPL Forrest Gump. He's also from Florida. Maybe it's a Florida thing. Battery percentage off. I think the first one.
I think you might be right. And you're very excited about it. And we're going to get to the Brave thing later. But this feels like the same thing where you finally found one and you're celebrating it as if it's 100% increase or something. So, yeah.
It's called confirmation bias. That's what it's called. Confirmation.
It's called resetting the x-axis.
Exactly. Oh, man. Brave. I feel bad. Yeah. No, I don't feel bad for them. They shouldn't have posted that graph. Anyway, we're going to talk about that too. All right. We have to talk about the App Store and the EU Epic Games escapades. Going for a little alliteration there. Right after we recorded last week's episode, we were talking about how Apple rejected Epic Games' Sweden developer account, which looked like they weren't going to be able to do a third-party app marketplace in the EU. I think that afternoon, like Thursday afternoon or maybe Friday, Apple reinstated the Epic Games account and are going to allow Epic Games to do third-party app marketplaces because they now have a Swedish developer account that's active. But Apple also announced even more changes coming to the App Store in the EU. Seems very fluid. It just seems like this continues to evolve in Apple's policies coming forward. And so this was the actual developer newsroom release. This actually came out earlier this week on Tuesday, telling about the more flexibility that app marketplaces and third-party developers are going to be able to have. And so we know about the alternative app marketplaces, linking out to purchase. Again, this is all EU only. Just keep that in mind. But the biggest change from this newsroom article is that web distribution is going to be possible, meaning if you are a developer in the EU, you will be able to release your apps or allow users to download your third-party app directly from a link on a website without even having to be in a third-party app marketplace or the Apple's App Store. And so you can just have that direct download link, which is pretty wild. This is, I think, the sideloading that most people think of when they think sideloading. Like, let me just go to a website, download an app, and install it on my phone. And in the EU, it seems like this would be possible. Now, there are some big caveats. I don't know if you saw these. There are some big things that... So if you are a developer in the EU and you want to offer this direct download link from Safari to be able to download an app, you have to had an app that had more than 1 million first annual installs on iOS in the EU in the prior year.
Yep.
So you have to have an app, so 1 million downloads in the prior year. I think that's weeding out a lot of smaller developers or new developers that, you know, might want to try and do this, you actually have to have basically a record of an app that's downloaded a lot. Also, you have to have an account, I think, in good standing for 2 years was the other thing. I'm trying to look here. You have to only offer apps from your developer account. Be responsive to communications from Apple regarding your apps distributed through web distribution, which seems like a very ominous bullet point.
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever that is. But here it is. Be a member of good standing in the Apple Developer Program for 2 continuous years or more. Jason, guess who has not had a developer account in good standing for 2 years or more is Epic Games.
Yeah. Well, so technically it doesn't say the previous 2 years. It does just say 2 continuous years or more. So it is it does a really good job of being very unclear when they try to expand and provide more information about things. For example, I just was thinking about this and I read the 1 million first installs as you had to have essentially had an app that added 1 million customers in the previous years, though this looks like the same language that they used when they were talking about the core technology fee, which really this is what that's about. It's about the point is they only want people to be able to do sideloading who are going to be paying them the 50 cents per download, 50 cent euro, whatever we've decided that's called. So, right. But if that's true, then it isn't just, so hypothetically, that would mean it wouldn't just be 1 million new customers. It would be first installs, which Apple considers an update during that year. So if you had either 1 million downloads of your app or some combination of downloads of your app plus updates of your app during that year, then you would be eligible. But again, the point's the same, that this is going to mean that you're paying 50 half a euro for every single one of these. But can I go back to the Epic thing for just a second? Because there was really fascinating Twitter thread between John Gruber and Tim Sweeney. I don't know if you saw this, based on that thread, I'll drop a link to it real quickly here if I can figure out where I put it in my... my browser, because I have 173,000 tabs open right now. But
tab groups.
Yeah. Tab groups would not help me right now. But but in that conversation, it was pretty clear that the application that Epic put through was just automatically approved. This was not like something that they negotiated with Apple, because there was some speculation. It's like Apple knew that this had happened. So why did they then, you know, can their account after the fact? And so it turns out that Apple, this was just an automated thing. It happened in it took about 3 days for it to be approved. And it was like one day Phil Schiller woke up and was like, wait a minute, I see a list of new app developer things and Epic's on there. How did this happen? I got to email somebody. And so I feel like the whole thing was just like a very strange confluence of events. I'm just dropping this link for you in our little iMessage, but it actually started with a chat from, or a post from Ryan Jones, who is the developer of Flighty, that Tim Sweeney responded to, that then John Gruber responded to, and Gruber and Sweeney went back and forth for a while talking kind of about the whole thing. It was actually fascinating just to kind of, you know, Tim Sweeney says, we applied for Epic Games Sweden account under Apple's normal process and Apple approved it in the normal way. We don't know what their process is to go through to approve accounts, but like they didn't call up, you know, Tim Cook and be like, hey dude, we're thinking of doing this. Is that possible?
Right.
And you know, it was just, they just fill out the form, hit submit, and 3 days later they had a developer account, and then someone at Apple realized, so then Apple kicked them out again. And then, as you and I predicted, I just want to make sure that we're on record getting our points here, as we predicted, the EU made them do it anyway, right? Because the response from Epic was basically, after a swift inquiry from the European Commission, Apple has decided to reinstate our developer account. So it's like somebody at the European Commission called up Tim Cook and was like, what are you doing? And the stakes are very high for Apple. I didn't realize this, but the penalty for not complying with the DMA is, I think I've heard, both 10 or 20% of your global revenue. So for a company like Apple, where their global revenue is like $400 billion, can you imagine if they got a fine of somewhere between $40 billion and $80 billion? Like, they're not going to mess around with that. Like, that's Apple makes a lot of money, but they're not, like, that is more money than they make selling Macs and iPads. Like, you know what I mean? Right. Not combined, but you get what I'm
saying.
Giving
up their entire Mac business.
It's like
in a single fine.
Yeah, they'd have to call Google and be like, we're going to need you to up that search deal just to cover our fines in the EU.
We have altered Google the deal. Could afford. I need to use that Darth Vader quote, because every week
we have altered the deal. So anyway, I just wanted to clarify what had exactly happened, because there was some question about why would Apple give them the account and then take it back because of the tweets. I still think it was pretty thin-skinned that Apple took it back because of the tweets, but it's almost worse that Apple really had no idea that they had given them the account in the first place.
Which is strange, because I have always thought that Apple promoted that their App Store review was a human process. And I feel like I remember images from years ago of like the app review like station. I feel like it was a, do you remember this? It was like a picture of a desk and it had like a Mac, an iPad, an iPhone, and there was like a human review. And that was years ago. So maybe it has changed, but I always thought it was human review, and that's why it took long. And so is this new that it's automated?
Well, hold on. There's a difference between App Store review and creating a developer account, right? I have a developer account. I promise you no one looked at my application, because I've never made an app. Only reason I have a developer account is because that used to be the only way you could get the betas.
To get the betas.
Right? Yeah, you don't need one now.
Same.
And yet I still have a $99 a year developer account for who knows what reason.
Which you don't need to pay that.
Right.
You don't need to pay that for the betas anymore.
Right.
That changed.
I could stop paying for it, but whatever. The point being that the process of creating a developer account seems to be automated. But yes, App Store review actually submitting the apps is not an automated thing. So,
all right. So now you had an article, and I would like you to share the one thing. Apple's plan to allow sideloading on the iPhone doesn't address the one thing anyone cares about. What is the one thing anyone cares about?
Yeah, the one thing is the money.
Oh.
Like, that's the only thing developers care about. Like, here, this is why I wrote this morning, because Apple's going to allow sideloading. Developers are still going to be really, really angry, because they're still going to collect the 50-cent euro per download or, you know, installation. I think we should just be clear about this, that the only thing either of these groups, developers, and I'm not throwing shade at developers, I understand why they care about the money. They care about the money because they don't feel like they're getting value out of the relationship from Apple, which is fair. Like, they don't feel like they're being treated well. So paying 30 cents of the money that they, or 30% of the money they bring in, feels like a ripoff. If you get rejected from the App Store, if you're a small developer, you get rejected because of some random, like, remember the call sheet, you know, we've talked a lot about call sheet. Right. We both love that app. I wrote a review of the app.
Yeah.
You know, I've talked with Casey Liss about it, and he kept getting rejected for random things. It's like, you have photos of, you know, have images of movies in here. It's like, yes, it's a movie app. Like, it's going to have photos of that's a copyright, you know, restriction. So I feel like if it was a more seamless process, developers might feel better about it. But the truth is, they want third-party app stores because they wanted to not pay Apple anything. Well, Apple's like, well, we're going to make you pay anyway. They wanted sideloading because they wanted to not. If Apple would, and what I said in this article is, if Apple would just lower the commission to say, oh, I don't know, 10% on everything except for games, developers would all use the App Store happily because of the benefits that they do get from it. They just wouldn't feel like they're being extorted and having their business held hostage. And then the flip side of that is Apple's focus on the money, right? That's the thing that Apple seems to care the most about, is actually making the experience worse for users. The fact that you can't sign up for Spotify in the app is ridiculous. And the fact that Spotify can't really tell you why you can't sign up or where to sign up is a terrible experience for users. And it is, I think, a tragedy that Apple is so focused on collecting pennies that it is missing that bigger point. So that was my article. Yeah.
All right.
You can tell I have feelings about it.
I do want to point out this one other interesting thing. This, again, John Gruber was talking about an app found in the App Store called Deal Machine. And this was interesting because it's available here in the U.S. It's a real estate app. And apparently this app is getting away with directly linking to an external website to start a subscription, which is flagrantly against the current App Store rules here in the U.S., but somehow, I don't know if this app is still live. I wonder if Apple, ejected it out of the store as soon as Gruber posted this article. But as soon as you download this app called Deal Machine, you basically see a splash screen asking you to choose a tier, and there's a free trial, and then you have to go into a tier which is either $100 a month all the way up to $500 a month. And when you choose your tier in this Deal Machine app, it sends you out to Safari to make a payment via Stripe, totally bypassing Apple's in-app payment system. And again, this is just wrong. Like, this is against Apple's App Store guidelines here in the US. And there's some horror stories of people unable to cancel their subscription because this is not a built-in Apple subscription. It's not on that subscriptions page in the settings of your iPhone. They are trying to contact the company directly, and it's a bit of a mess for some of these users. And that's a hefty subscription.
Yeah.
$500 to $1,000 a month, or I think some of them are a year. And I just think this doesn't feel great, again, in light of all that's going on in the EU. And it seems like there's some arbitrary rule changing sometimes, and Apple just kind of, you know, moving goalposts at times. And this again is like, and then apps like this, like just kind of skirt and somehow go under the radar and make it into the App Store. I don't know how an app with a splash screen and a $500 subscription per month, as soon as you open the app, would get past App Review.
Right.
But apparently it did.
It's funny because there's this phrase on the internet called getting fireballed, which is not obscene. It's just that if you get linked to from John Gruber's blog, Daring Fireball, it can crash your website because it sends so much traffic. Like, yes, this is a thing that would happen frequently to small websites when he would link to them. Right. And it's usually sort of a catch 22 pop up, generally a positive thing because you just got all this traffic. I feel like this is a totally different version of that because I can't imagine. I mean, we know for a fact that people like Phil Schiller and Greg Joswiak read Daring Fireball.
Oh, absolutely.
So this poor developer, and I shouldn't say this poor developer because they're charging $500 a month for
not
a subscription.
Poor. Not, is not
but
poor.
This is unfortunate for them that it came to this. It's kind of like we were just hiding right over here. No one was paying attention. I promise you everyone is paying attention now.
Everyone sees it now. Yeah. The app is probably not even there anymore. One other, I just want to mention this in light of all the EU stuff. The other thing that happened in 17.4 was that default browser choice screen that comes up when you update in the EU. And we talked about that, and there's been, you know, whether that's a good experience for users or not. But Brave Browser, which is a Chromium browser, you can get it on your Mac, you can get the app on your iPhone. Well, they posted this graph on Threads saying since 17.4 and that splash screen for choosing a default browser, that their uptick in users, you know, has this very big line going up, that once that happened, 17.4 released, all of a sudden it shot up and a bunch of new users are now using Brave because they're arguing that users now have a choice and are at least surfaced the option. And when people are given the option, they might choose a third-party app. Now, okay, that's their argument. One of the issues was this graph, which The y-axis always seems to get people, and Apple included. Sometimes when they're talking about those M chips, those y-axes are very strangely, calculated. But this graph basically shows that on average, they had like 7,000 to 8,000 installs on iPhone. And then once 17.4 happened, it jumped up to 11,000, which is 3,000 more downloads installs in the EU, and there's probably over 100 million iPhone users in the EU. So that's context, like 3,000 users, you know, for a third-party app, that might be great. Brave is a pretty big browser, I think, so I don't know if this is a huge difference. But also, in light of all the users in the EU, iPhone users, this is probably this is a minuscule percentage of people who have installed Brave. And also, like, don't mess with your y-axis to make it look like it's a huge jump. Like, maybe start at zero. Maybe, I don't know. What should they have done differently with this graph so they didn't get all this blowback?
So first of all, I want to say I've interviewed Brendan Eich, the CEO of Brave, on stage at Web Summit before and he is certainly not a fan of the way the internet exists today, which is essentially a duopoly between Apple and Google. So I want to just, there is a little bit of feelings involved there. So, okay. Generally speaking, I would have said his bigger beef is with Google, which is why you wouldn't build another Chromium browser if you didn't have a beef with Google. But in fairness to them, this is literally the exact kind of graph that Apple uses at every presentation it does about everything, right? They are just taking a cue from the masters of graphs that mean nothing, right? So at least they put numbers on the side, which is because Apple has put up graphs that don't even have numbers, and you're just like, this is our computer compared to something. We don't know. Like, no one has a clue what it is that they're talking about. So I do just want to give them credit for that. But this backfired immediately because people were pointing out that you put out a graph that made it look like your installs had quadrupled, and really, they maybe went up by 50% and you went from 8,000 to 11. Now, is that per day or is that total people using it in the EU? I don't know. Like, it's hard to say what that means.
Who knows?
So what they should have probably done differently is waited over a course of like 3 months and said, here's how this has made a change. Because I don't remember who it was I saw that posted this, but one take
Gruber
was like,
commented.
Well,
Gruber
one take was like, again, but we're just confused. Right? Like, there's an, I mean, the browser ballot is terrible. It doesn't mean that people may, yeah, there you go. There's one of our Apple graphs that have.
This was during the Scary Fast event where Apple released the M3 lineup. And it's
what
like,
does it even mean?
The y-axis just is labeled relative performance. So I feel like if you label an axis relative, by default, it's already nebulous. Yeah. Is like,
you can just draw lines anywhere you want, put numbers, and be like, this is just, you know, relative. It's all relative.
And then zero, like if it was a performance axis, I would think maybe 0 to 100%, like when it's peak performance. But the y-axis is 0 to 150. Like 0 to 150, yeah. What? I don't know what that means.
It's like units of something, but we don't know what they are. So, and in fairness to Apple, again, these are what are called Bezos graphs, because Jeff Bezos is the person who originally started putting out graphs like this that mean absolutely nothing where they're not properly labeled. But I think Brave may have a point. It's just that they didn't do a very good job of articulating that point, because it's kind of like, this is actually the exact same thing that we're going to talk about with the Kate Middleton photo. It's like, you just lost your credibility, right, because of this thing that you did that made us not be able to trust you.
Right.
But it will be very interesting to see the effect on Safari users in the EU based on users having to be given a choice, right, in what browser they want to install. Right. The thing is...
Right.
You can already download Brave. You can already download, the whole list of browsers are already available in the App Store. None of them are new, right? Chrome is an option, and yet people still use Safari. So I don't know that it's going to make a huge difference. Good for Brave if they picked up some extra users, but was it Gruber or was it somebody else who was like, maybe it was an accident. Maybe people were just confused because this browser ballot is so ridiculous. People just tap things so they can get past it.
Right. Brave posted this image of the splash screen. And in this image, Brave is at the top, but they said the list of browsers is randomized.
Sure.
So if you're in the EU and you update to 17.4, it's not like Brave is the first choice all the time. I would be curious if Microsoft to release a graph, hopefully one that makes sense, about is there an uptick in Edge downloads since 17.4 in the EU? Maybe because Microsoft is a more well-known brand. But to Brave's credit, probably way too late for the backlash to be subsided, but they posted another graph with the y-axis going from 0 to 12,500, and then its new install volume. And like, you do still see the uptick. You know, again, you can make this y-axis 0 to 1,000,000, and then it would just look like a flat line. So, you know, I'm not exactly sure what people want. Yes, there were more installs of Brave than on average after the 17.4 update. That's also not indicative of usage. Like, there might have been a bunch of people who downloaded and installed Brave and was like, oh, wait a minute, I can't access my iCloud tabs,
right,
or something, or all my bookmarks aren't here. Never mind, I'll go back to Safari. So like, this doesn't tell the whole story.
Well, and it isn't. The ballot is really just select your default browser. So what this is essentially saying, though, is people were selecting Brave as their default browser, and then they went to download it. So think about what that means. These are people who didn't already have Brave on their phone. So like, did they not even know it existed? True. Are they really choosing it as their default browser if they didn't? Like, it has a nice icon, I guess. I don't know. Like, it seems to me as though, like,
that is true.
It's just, that's the percentage of people who got the browser ballot and Brave was first, and they just tapped through and like, wait, what did I just do? Because if you tap one of those links, it takes you to the App Store to download that particular browser. And I think then once you download it also changes the setting, maybe, or I don't know, somebody in the EU can let us know what happens next. But all I wanted to be clear is, like, if you were to go down and choose Safari, I think it would do nothing because it's already on your phone and it would just leave the default setting alone. So this means these are people who chose it as their default browser and didn't even have it on their phone. So I don't know what that tells you.
That is true. So anyway, let us know in the EU. Also, by the way, in case you were going to try and use a VPN to download like a third-party app or whatever, one of the things that Apple is doing, I think we mentioned this on the past episode, but they are also using like geolocation to see if you are in the EU or not, and if you would like be allowed to install third-party app marketplaces or now install apps via the web with the new web distribution options. So if you think that like using a VPN here in the US to make it look like your IP address is coming from Europe will let you download Fortnite in a couple months or whatever, like, it's not the case.
Yeah.
It's not,
and
just
I,
that.
I think if I remember correctly, I thought that there was like three things that they take into account: the location of your Apple ID, right? What country your Apple ID is associated with,
right,
your actual location, and I don't even remember what the other ones, maybe whatever address you listed. So like, it's not like you can just tell I'm in the EU, let me just get all those different features. You have to, like, it would be a lot of work for someone.
Right.
You have to get a burner, you know, Apple ID somehow set up in the EU.
Yeah,
no. It's like, it just doesn't feel like it's worth it. No. I know there are people who
and
do
turn
the
off
office.
Every location. location
service. Exactly. I know there are people, well, maybe it won't even let you do it if you have location services turned off. Like, because it, if it's depending on that to tell it where you're at, you probably do have to have that on. So it's probably not worth it. Really, like sideloading is not, why as a user, why, unless you're trying to download apps that are just not available. Okay, but like other than that, it's just a technical curiosity, I guess, for some people.
I mean, gaming is a huge deal. Like, if my kids could download Fortnite directly to their iPads or iPhones from a website, they would do it. Like, that would be enough for them. I think users maybe like us, like, there's no app that I want that I can't get already in the App Store. Which I think when you're in kind of like the productivity world of Apple, it's like a calendar app, task apps, you know, there's a wealth of third-party apps you can get directly from the App Store, and third-party developers. Like, but I think maybe games is probably one of the big use cases. So well, anyway, we'll see.
Just buy your kids a PlayStation. Just get your kids a PS4. They can play Fortnite just fine. It's cheaper than all of this.
But Jason, it's not portable. The PlayStation is not portable. And like, my kids will try to do cloud gaming. And I think PlayStation has this one where you can like play your console, but it's basically like streaming the video to your device. And even in the same house on my ridiculous 2 gig speed internet and my Wi-Fi, that's really good. It's not a good experience. Like, it's like playing it is not great. So that's why I say maybe games are the option. But I mentioned VPN. Because a lot of youths here in the U.S. might get very familiar with VPNs, because TikTok might get banned. And so this has been going around in the U.S. government, and the House of Representatives passed a bill to force TikTok, either for the Chinese owner, which is ByteDance, to either sell TikTok to, I guess, a U.S. company, or ban the app. So the House of Representatives passed this bill. And now it's going to the Senate, and if the Senate decides to do this, it is possible that TikTok either has to be sold, and then it's on ByteDance in China, whether or not they are actually going to sell it. It would be probably a huge loss of revenue ongoing for them, or the app might get banned. Now, this would be a situation where I think a lot of people would get very familiar with VPNs very quickly, because I imagine if it was banned, quote unquote, here in the U.S., switching over to, like, millions of people already have the app on their phone. Using a VPN will probably allow you to use this. But I will say, because I do use TikTok, and we'll talk about this, we'll get into why or why not in a minute. But one day earlier this week, if you opened the TikTok app, there was a splash screen from TikTok of, like, call your congressman, which anyone who uses TikTok probably, like, the Venn diagram of people who use TikTok and call people on the phone, like, the circles don't even touch. It's not even a Venn diagram. It's just two big circles.
And then add people who know what their congressperson is, and that circle is just way off in the corner, right? Like, there's no overlap between those things.
I mean, I get it. I mean, it was desperate, but I don't think it's going to happen. I was trying to find a screenshot of this. This is from Mashable. This is what the screen
was in my article
looked like.
I put it in my article too.
Oh, was it in your article? Yeah, well, let me just share your article.
That's all right. While you're doing that, I want to back up just so people may remember that the Trump administration tried to ban TikTok, right? They tried to force them to sell to Microsoft. And the basic reason for that was because teenagers were using TikTok to organize basically a protest. Or no, they were organizing this thing where Trump was having a rally and TikTokers were reserving all the spots for it and then didn't show up. And so like no one was at this event. And so Trump got really, really, really mad at TikTok. So he was going to ban it. He was going to make Microsoft buy it. Satya Nadella, there was an interview he did where he talked about that experience. And he's like, it was just the most bizarre couple weeks of my life. Like, flat out, this, I don't even know what was happening. Yes, we tried to buy TikTok. And then all of a sudden, poof, it was gone. And so that happened. And then after a while, people got distracted by things like, you know, the election and whatever else was going on after that. And people lost interest in worrying about it. And then at some point in the very recent future, well, last year, I think it was, Montana passed a law to ban TikTok. And a federal judge said, you can't do that. Right. That is still under appeal.
Right.
Then at some point, members of Congress, members of the Senate have received like briefings. Like, this is a little bit unclear, but the reporting is that sometime in the very recent future, they received a briefing about the national security threat that is TikTok. And then all of a sudden it was like, we have to do something. And so there is actually a subcommittee on China-ish in the House, and they had a hearing on this. This bill kind of came out of nowhere. It's a bipartisan bill. I can't pronounce the Democratic senator. I apologize. His name is actually in this article.
Congressman Raja.
Yeah, thank you. And Mike Gallagher, who's a Republican. They've put this bill forward, which would essentially make it illegal for Google and Apple to host TikTok in the app stores if it was controlled by a foreign national, or it would be illegal for other services on the internet to sort of serve it up. So this was like, wasn't really clear whether this was going to pass or not. And then TikTok did what you just described. They put up this scare sheet. You could not get past it. There was the only options you have were force quit the app or tap that link that says call. And when you called, you put in your zip code, which, by the way, TikTok does not use precise location tracking. They just use general location tracking. You just gave them your zip code. They now know exactly where you're located if you did this. And apparently thousands of people called their congresspeople, many of them having no idea what they were calling to talk about. It was just, please don't ban my TikTok, right? I saw this thing. You want to get rid of TikTok? That would be bad. And the question is, are you old enough to vote? And the people are like, no, I'm 13. Well, you shouldn't have a TikTok account, and I don't care. And then they passed it 50 to nothing, right? It had the exact opposite effect that TikTok, like, they vastly overestimated their pull from doing this. And they've seen other, like Uber has done this notoriously, right? They would go into a city, they would recruit a bunch of drivers, start recruiting a bunch of riders, and then they would be like, lobby your local city council to make sure that they don't block us or whatever. So this, now we're at the point where this week, the House of Representatives actually passed this bill. They actually, like, it is now going to the Senate, and it was passed by a pretty large majority. It was like 352 to 65. This was not a small thing. It's now going to the Senate, and President Biden has already said that if the Senate passes this bill, he'll sign it, which would force within 180 days for ByteDance to either divest of TikTok or for them to be removed from the app stores. So it's not exactly a ban, but there are a lot. There's 170, I think, million U.S. users of TikTok, so this has a real impact on people. But also, the objection to this from a lot of people is like, well, this is a First Amendment issue, right? Like, you can't block TikTok. That's where people have the right to speak on whatever platform that they want. It's not really like what the First Amendment says. It doesn't say you have the right to say anything you want anywhere you want. Like, the U.S. can say you can't, you can't have TikTok. You can just post your stuff on Reels. Like, it's really not a First Amendment issue. It's just we think this app is bad. We don't want it in our country. So
TikTok is fascinating to me for a couple of reasons. One, when that Montana law was going through whatever it was doing, Hank Green, who is a really big YouTuber, and he's a huge TikTok following. He's very active on TikTok. He was like, I've built this huge following. And I guess what's fascinating to me is TikTok has allowed a bunch of new kinds of creators to reach a level of prominence so quickly. An example would be Keith Lee, the food reviewer. I think he was also an MMA fighter, so he might have had an audience previously. But there are a bunch of people that you would have never heard of before. There's a guy that I follow who talks about like World War One and Two history in like really funny and creative ways. And he just like posted a TikTok that he got a brand deal through it. He now has 1 million followers. Literally, like, not to be disparaging, like, he was no one. Like, no one knew who he was. And the fact that it has allowed that to, like, happen to these kinds of creators, I think is cool. Like, it brings people who have the creative capability and knowledge and ability to explain things. Like, there's a bunch of, like, really great creative people on there, which can't really translate that audience to another platform. Like, so many TikTokers, because the money situation is so bad on TikTok. Like, if you try to be a creator, even with millions of followers, you will make maybe a few $100, $1,000 a month, even with millions and millions of views. And it's only here in the US. Canada doesn't have a creator fund. There's no monetization in Canada. And I'm not sure how it is in other countries outside the US. So, like, even though it's not a great platform for creators to make money, it has been a platform to create audiences. And without TikTok, I don't know if these people would have been able to create a platform on YouTube or whatever. And this was indicative. And the flip side of that, I've been listening to a lot of Nilay Patel Decoder episodes about algorithmic platforms and the downfall of society or whatever. And to that point, the reason why I have TikTok is it was during the pandemic. It was literally 4 years ago, like yesterday, because I still remember It was on my birthday, March 13th.
Wait, your birthday was yesterday? Wait,
my birthday was yesterday.
Hold on. We have to stop for a second. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I didn't know this. This is the kind of thing your podcast partner should know. Well,
you know, I feel weird about, you know, I thought all day about posting like, hey, it's my birthday. And I was like, what is that? What am I asking people?
I don't know, but listeners, listen, if you have not left a 5-star review yet, please make that your birthday present to Steven. If you're watching this on YouTube, leave him a comment and subscribe. But I just want your review to say happy birthday, Steven, please. It'll be super confusing for people later, but this is important. I'm sorry. Go back to TikTok now, but your birthday 4 years ago, keep going.
Yes. Go ahead and subscribe to the YouTube channel. If you're going to do one thing, if everyone that's listening right now subscribes to our YouTube channel, we will have thousands of subscribers.
That'd be amazing.
So that'll give you
happy birthday, Steven. Yeah, thank you.
That would be amazing. Thank you very much.
Okay, TikTok.
So 4 years ago on my birthday is when the world shut down.
Okay, that was not a good birthday. Let's make this birthday better, please.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. But that was 4 years ago. And so the world shut down. Everybody was home. And it was in that moment where I was like, well, I'm home. Let me try. That's when I created my personal YouTube channel. It was in 2020. And I created a TikTok account. And the first TikTok video I ever posted was, ironically, a shortcut. Okay. Which is how I've been making, I don't know, audience everywhere, shortcuts.
Yeah.
Thank you, Matthew Casanelli, if you're listening. You've inspired me. And it was a shortcut about how to like automate changing your wallpaper every day using an Unsplash API. Like it was the most nerdiest thing ever. That first TikTok I ever posted, literally in the first 36 to 48 hours, got 700,000 views, the most views I had ever gotten on a piece of content I had ever made, and 10,000 followers on TikTok, literally in days. And in that moment, I was like, this is amazing. Maybe this is a platform to make a go at content creation. And so I did. But just to give you some perspective, 4 years later, I now have, I think, 21,000 followers, which is not commensurate with that day one growth. You know, it's like that Brave browser graph.
That trend line did not continue.
The trend line did not continue, nor, like, I remember for a while I would post TikTok videos, like clips of my long form YouTube, and I would say, go watch the full thing on YouTube. And I would literally get comments on TikTok of people being like, we're not going to your YouTube, bro. And I was like, huh, right. If you're going to create content on a platform, you have to basically create it for that platform and for the audience on that platform and not expect them to follow you elsewhere. If people really, really love your content, like they'll find your YouTube channel and subscribe, but you can't just keep call to actioning them every video. Like it just doesn't work. So I realized maybe it's not a great platform, at least for my kind of content. Again, other content creators, maybe they have succeeded. So I find TikTok to be fascinating because that has been my personal experience. And I see funny Dune memes. Mm. And I save those memes and I show them to my kids. And I have not seen those memes elsewhere. And I could just use Instagram Reels or whatever, but it takes months for trends to get to Instagram Reels. Like it's just accurate. Like you'll see Dune 2 memes in a couple months on Instagram Reels. Yeah. Like that joke is just reality.
Yeah.
And TikTok is just where everything happens at first. So that's why I like being on there. I still feel a little icky about privacy and security. Like, it does feel like that. I don't know what that app's doing in the background, but also like, well, too late now. It's been on my phone for a number of years. But yeah, so that, I don't know. That's my feelings on TikTok. And that's why I actually don't know. I don't know if I would care if it gets banned because honestly, my audience didn't work on there. I'm not trying to build it on there anymore. But I don't know. It's helped a lot of people, helped a lot of creators get an audience, whether that's been beneficial or not. So
TikTok has an algorithm that is by far the most effective at serving people. If you want to know a person, just look at their For You page. It'd be terrifying, right? It's true. No one wants to show their For You page because it's probably like, I didn't want you to know that I like watching cow, you know, cute little baby cow videos. Like, I just was hoping no one would know that about me. Like, seriously. Like,
I was wondering what you were going to pull there in the moment. And like, okay, that's pretty safe. That's pretty safe. There was one like congressional hearing where they were grilling the TikTok CEO. Yep. And the congressman was like, all I see on my For You page is blah, 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 blah. And it was kind of embarrassing. And it was like, well, if you're seeing that on your For You page, what you want.
You probably shouldn't say it. Yeah, because you just shouldn't say that out loud. Clearly, this congressperson didn't understand how effective that
you didn't get it.
Yeah, algorithm is. And so that piece of it, though, is one of the reasons why TikTok... So it has all of the problems that every social media platform has, except for that it is in some ways extra engaging because of how effective that algorithm is. So it does bring people in. Yeah. But none of that would be as big of a deal if it wasn't sort of under the thumb of the influence of the Chinese Communist Party, because some people talk about like the risk of them sharing information with on Americans with China. But like, let's be honest, Stephen, like, it would be maybe embarrassing if someone saw all the videos that people cared about on TikTok, but China doesn't care. They just don't care about, like, they have other things to worry about, right? But one of the things that came out was the ratio of content after I think it was October 7th, that was pro-Israel versus pro-Palestine was like 95% pro-Palestine versus 5% pro-Israel. So regardless of what side of that issue you're on, it's pretty clear that there was a slant in the algorithm trying to push a very specific agenda, and that agenda benefits China, not just benefits, you know, people who want to consume content. And this is why TikTok's stunt backfired so much, because if your job is to make laws that you think will protect the privacy and security of Americans, and all of a sudden your phone starts ringing off the hook because teenagers were seeing a message on TikTok that told them to take action, it just proved your point, right? It literally just proved your point that this is an app that is serving the purposes, not just of the general public, but it imposes a risk. Because imagine if the Chinese government decided that the thing that it should be showing was vote this way or don't vote this way or don't vote at all, or, you know, you can vote by mail, or you not vote by mail, you can vote on the internet, or you can vote by cell phone. These are all things that have appeared like in past, especially in the past election, where people were getting text messages that said, don't go to your polling place, save time, just vote here on this link. Well, you, by the way, you can't vote on the internet, people. You have to either show up in person or vote by mail, like absentee. Right. Like that's it. That's the only way it's allowed in this country. And so that is the risk. So I think that if, I don't know that, like, we don't, our kids do not, well, let's be honest, my kids might have TikTok. They're not supposed to, but you know, they're kids, they do things they're not supposed to. So I don't want to exhaustively say my kids don't have TikTok, but my kids are not supposed to have TikTok. I have two children who are technically old enough to have TikTok accounts. I just don't think it's beneficial for them to have one more thing to scroll through. Yeah. They do have Instagram, and it's funny. The Verge, had the Verge, they recorded a live episode of the Vergecast at South by Southwest. We'll talk about that, I think, in our bonus episode. But in that particular episode, they were drafting streaming services, and somebody drafted TikTok in the free category. And later on, somebody tried to draft Reels, and they're like, that's not a streaming service. I'm like, sure it is. It's just TikTok 2 weeks later. Like, it is TikTok, later, right? So our kids do have Instagram, and if it was not owned by the China, you know, by ByteDance, so ByteDance is not Chinese government, but it is, has influenced by the Chinese government. If it wasn't, I still don't think we would let them have it because of all the other reasons, but it would make it less of an issue for most Americans, because you would at least feel like the content that is being served isn't there because someone has their finger on the algorithm trying to influence public opinion about issues that might benefit a foreign government. So that's my TikTok rant.
No, it's good. And it's part of the larger conversation, which maybe we could save it for another time, but I literally have been hearing Neelay Patel talk a lot about algorithmic feeds, and he's been interviewing people on Decoder. And it is interesting that once everything went algorithmic, I think, you know, Twitter used to be chronological only, and then Twitter went algorithmic. And now everything, every social platform is algorithmic. Yes, you can go to your following feed on Threads, and you can try to go to your latest tweets on Twitter, but it's several taps, and a vast, vast majority of users just don't do it. And so if anyone's looking at social media, YouTube included, it's an algorithmic based content feed. And that means those algorithms, not that it's sentient or that there's someone behind that we know of, like pulling the levers and dials, but it basically feeds in or creates the trend. And I think a fascinating example is the Stanley Cup phenomenon, which
you have to give a disclosure.
Disclosure is, I talked about this on the Movies on the Side podcast. I think it was a bonus episode, but we have Stanley Cups. Anyway, it's a long story. But if you look into that, there's several like long YouTube videos that talk about the Stanley Cup phenomenon. And basically what it comes down to is the marketing guy who used to work at Crocs actually, and was able to make Crocs go viral, namely on TikTok through a variety of mechanisms, influencers, things like that. He left Crocs, went to Stanley, and now Stanley has had its moment where it's blown up on social media, trend, like you see Stanley Cups everywhere now. I think it's interesting for two reasons. One, how that algorithmic feed look on your phone can translate into a physical product going viral in real life. I see Stanley Cups everywhere, which is wild. But also, like, That was basically largely the direction of one person, namely the marketing person at Stanley, who was at Crocs, who figured out enough of the bullet points or the steps to do to create that cultural thing on social media that translates to real life. And that is powerful and beneficial if you're a company wanting to sell a product, but can also be somewhat concerning when it's trying to, you know, promote or whatever ideas. You know, I think that, and that affects on a generation. And so one way or the other, I find it fascinating. I don't know if as a whole, like on the scale of Dungeons and Dragons, like morality chart, is TikTok a chaotic evil? Is it neutral evil? Is it, it's not good. No. Like I'm not putting it in the good category. I don't know if it's neutral, but it's an algorithm.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just find it to be fascinating.
So. Okay. Two closing thoughts. The first closing thought is I just want to, when Steven says it's a long story, I don't know if you've watched Dune 2, but essentially that is the story of Steven's quest to get. I would recommend you just, I mean, I have no stake in the game. I'd recommend it's worth subscribing to the members edition of Movies on the Side just to hear that story. You can tell I'm a big fan of that movie. I mean, I've been on at least one episode, so you should go listen to that one too.
Yeah,
but that it is worth it. But then my second actual real point was, I think the best example, I'm kind of surprised you didn't mention this, of the effect of TikTok is Widget Smith, right? Widget Smith was an app that when Apple introduced, was it iOS 14 that had widgets for the first time-ish?
15, maybe.
So when they first came out, no, iOS 14, I guess I should look at my own article that I have up right here. But I interviewed David Smith shortly after that. And I mean, it was his app, Widget Smith was downloaded at the time over 50 million times. And it was entirely driven by teenagers on TikTok just showing off their, you know, aesthetic, just, you know, home screens that they were able to create. The funny thing is almost none of them are using widgets, right? Like they're all just using they're using widgets to create icons that they can, they're basically like shortcuts or whatever. But anyway, so that is in my mind the best example. That's great. Wonderful for David Smith and Widget Smith. Like that's amazing. Yeah. That's by far his most successful app probably that he'll ever make. And it's entirely due to TikTok. But imagine if the thing that went viral was something else. Like that's all you have to ask yourself. Right. Imagine if that kind of ability to drive that, which in this case was great. What if it was in the case of the war in Gaza or like this next election, like we have high stakes happening all the time. And imagine if 50 million people, instead of downloading an app, were like, oh, I've been influenced by this and it's going to change the course of an election or something. So
yeah,
well, the last TikTok thing, because just to wrap this up then is there is a, this morning on CNBC, former Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, who most people have no idea who he is, but doesn't matter. He was a like film financier and an investor, and then he became the Treasury Secretary. He has said he's forming a group to buy TikTok if this law passes. So the good news there is that you may not lose your TikTok. It may stick around.
And I'll admit, I am conflicted also. Like, would it be good if it was gone? I don't know. Honestly, I would trade today TikTok for Vine. Give me back Vine.
Wow, that's a deep cut.
I will make that trade today. But honestly, like, that's another funny, I don't know, on TikTok, sometimes you will see comments, a lot of comments sometimes, like, this would have killed on Vine. Like, people, there's still nostalgia for that platform. And I do feel like Vine was just ahead of its time because TikTok, early TikTok was basically what Vine was doing. Like, short videos that looped.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. And that's what Vine was. It was just a little too soon, maybe, or like creators weren't ready for it. I don't know. And you still see a lot of Vine stars on TikTok. And they're very, like, you know, very, I think King Batch is one of them. And you see a lot of the other ones. But anyway.
Yeah, the two problems Vine have was, one, I think the videos were limited to 6 seconds, which is maybe they picked the wrong number. And then two, they got bought by Twitter, which is not necessarily known for its exceptional product capabilities. This is before it became X. I'm just saying, in general, Twitter was never known for having, and like Twitter was notoriously fragile. And so they probably couldn't host videos longer than 6 seconds looping because like they are not YouTube and they are not TikTok or even Facebook. Yeah. So yeah, I can't believe.
And Twitter had a history of like kind of fumbling acquisitions and new features like Periscope.
Yeah, all of them.
Was a live everything. Streaming.
They fumble all, it all. Every, just anything they buy.
Vine, Periscope. Yeah, everything. But anyway, we're actually going to try and do a lightning round because I do have some things that I want to mention. Before we do, want to thank that this episode is brought to you by our members that support us directly in Apple Podcasts or via Memberful. And you can do that today. You get bonus episodes every week. You get an ad-free version, meaning this section will be cut out and we just go right to the next chapter. And you can do that directly in Apple Podcasts. We make it easy there. $5 a month, $50 a year, and you get the bonus episodes and ad-free versions. I will say there are no chapters for the audio in Apple Podcasts. Not on me. Apple strips my chapters out for subscriber audio. I don't know why. So if you love chapters as much as I do, because I really love putting chapters and custom chapter artwork, what you can do is go to primarytech.fm, click the bonus episodes link, and you can support us via Memberful. And that feed you get when you support us that way, it can be the only feed, you know, you get all the episodes, the full episodes and the bonus episodes together in that feed. I post everything in both places. And that means you could support the show, get ad-free versions and the bonus episodes there as well. And if you can't do that, we understand. That's why a 5-star rating and a subscribe on YouTube means a lot. So thank you to everyone who supports us directly, although they didn't hear this because they got the ad-free version. But thank you of you who will support the show. Because of this. So we thank you very much.
Wonderful.
All right. Lightning round. Here we go. I just want to mention, because I've been watching The Crown a lot on Netflix, that this image of Kate Middleton that was posted, apparently she's the future Queen of England. She posted this picture. She had surgery maybe a couple months ago. Unclear what exactly the surgery was. Royal family has been kind of cagey on it. And she has been out of the public eye for quite a while since then. And there's been questions like, is she okay? What's going on? Royal family has been kind of mum, pun intended, on that. And so, sorry, I didn't do it. Anyway, Kate Middleton posted this photo. It was Mother's Day in the UK earlier this week on March 11th. And so it posted this photo and like, you just look at it, you just glance by like, okay, cool. Like posted a photo. She looks like she's doing well. Good to go. Well, as people do on the internet, they dove into this photo in depth. Saw a lot of weird apparitions or whatever, like the sleeve on the sweater. This is like poor healing brush technique in Photoshop. Like, where's the cuff of the sweater over here? Like, something funky happened here. And also, like, are Kate Middleton's arms really this long? Like, this seems kind of like an odd thing. Maybe those hands were detached. Who knows? And there's also, like, weird hair stuff going on. Again, like, poor healing brush technique in Photoshop. You know, hand is a little odd. So just some weird things in this photo. And it was getting a lot of backlash because it seemed like, you know, if you're already not saying a lot about what happened and then you release a photo that seems heavily doctored, then it looks even more suspicious. Yeah. And the royal family came out after all the backlash and they were like, Kate Middleton said, yes, I did Photoshop. Sorry, my skills are not great at Photoshop. I did adjust this photo, whatever. A, would she not have a person to Photoshop for her? Like maybe she's Photoshopping on her own. Like, that's cool, you know, work on the skills, that's great, but that's kind of curious. And number two, I just think this kind of opens up the conversation about, as AI generated content becomes more prevalent, the Sora open AI video generator, they've been doing some interviews with MKBHD and Joanna Stern. They're going to be releasing Sora later this year and being able to generate that video in minutes. You're like, do a prompt, makes video. I think it's interesting that everyone's eyes are going to be looking for stuff. I think AI, which is, I guess, good, but I don't know, might be harder and harder to recognize it. And I don't know. I just think it's going to be an interesting time as we head into the next couple of years with all this AI generated stuff. What did you think about this photo?
Everything about this story is weird. Like, I don't even know what to think about any of it because I saw a take, which I think the one I agree with. The problem with this photo isn't that she Photoshopped things necessarily, because we briefly were talking about this before we started recording. I don't know what that means. Obviously, there's some weird stuff happening. Does that mean that they took like four photos and she sort of tried to piece together the ones that were and if that's the case, like, that's fine. Get a pixel. It'll do it for you without even having to think about it. Like, come on. But
best take.
Yeah, exactly. Take. So like, do that instead. But the take that I heard that I agree with is the problem with this photo is that what the public wanted was a proof of life photo, right? Like in a hostage situation, you ask for a proof of life photo to make sure that the person is still alive before you pay the money. And people wanted that. And if you got a proof of life photo that looked like it was AI generated, you probably would not send the money, right? You would not, like, if you got a proof of life photo and the person's holding up a newspaper and the date on it looks like you just drew it in with a Sharpie, like, people are going to be like, I don't think that this qualifies. And that's really the problem with this photo. I don't understand any of the politics of, like, the royal family. I don't understand any of the implications of, like, what are surgery, like, none of that stuff matters. There's rumors about all kinds of weird things happening. But the one piece, I guess, that's a takeaway for our listeners is this is not the last time that this is going to happen. Not with the royal family, but where a photo is going to come out. People are going to start looking at it. Right. And all of a sudden it's like, huh, did that really happen? And I guess that's a good thing, because right now AI is getting much more convincing at this kind of thing. But it's the whole thing's weird.
And I'm just glad that there are internet people out there who are going to be picking apart every photo that's posted from here henceforth to eternity and letting us know whether it looks funny or not. I want that. I want people to do that.
I don't know if I agree with that, but it's probably a useful service to some extent.
With the rise of AI generated content, I feel like that would be a very useful skill. You know, you got cybersecurity, you got AI generated content security. I don't know. Yeah. I want somebody looking at it.
Yeah, my favorite thing is people who point out all the things that you put wrong and stuff. Like, that's my favorite. I love that.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, exactly. Apparently, this news came out that Apple Vision Pro was used in surgery to, quote unquote, eliminate human error. This is a 9to5 Mac article. This is weird on several levels. One, yes, the Apple Vision Pro was in a surgery. Two, it wasn't the surgeon wearing the Apple Vision Pro. It was one of the, like, aides that hands equipment to the surgeon. I think that's an important detail. It wasn't the person actually, like, doing the surgery. And it was the Apple Vision Pro was basically, like, identifying tools and making sure that the tool the aide was picking up was the right tool. I'm not, like, there's no screenshots of what it looked like or screen grabs of, like, how, you know, it's all just kind of like text. They're telling it, like, recalling what had happened. Okay, that's interesting. But yeah, I don't know. It's that you still don't have an Apple Vision Pro.
Nope. I still don't have an Apple Vision Pro, and I'm okay with that. I mean, unless somebody wants to send me one, and I'm okay with that too. But I will say that if you ever get, you know, ready for surgery and the surgeon is wearing an Apple Vision Pro, you should get up off the table and you should leave. Even if you're under anesthesia, I'm just saying, like, you should bail immediately. I don't care. Just take that hospital gown and run, because you do not want your surgeon wearing a Vision Pro. Can you imagine? I mean, if the thing just failed in the middle of your surgery, it's like, okay, we're gonna cut this you know, we're doing a heart transplant, we gotta make the cut right there. Wait, where? I can't see anything.
You just hear the bong. It just goes dark.
You don't want that bad stuff.
Amazon is gonna let sellers paste a link and AI can make the product page. This kind of goes along with the AI generated or altered photo of the royal family. I find this interesting. You know, this might seem, I don't know what this seems like to people. I've used Printful to make, like, merch for podcasts, and they do a really good job of just kind of, like, generating images of the product on stock models, basically, and, like, creating those images for you and making it easy to use those then when you want to sell your merch. And using AI to do it, I think it makes sense. You know, I imagine Amazon will keep an eye to make sure, like, these AI whatever generated product pages are actually representative of the product being sold. I'm sure the reviews would go down really fast if it was a difference between what you got and what you saw on the page. But I thought this was interesting. You had put this in here. What did you think about it?
Well, I only have two quick takes because this is lightning round. The first one is I think you're super optimistic to think that Amazon is going to do any checking of anything. Have you seen, like, when Kara Swisher's book came out, there was immediately like 30 AI generated versions of the book that, like, were all available on Amazon. And I mean, I'm pretty sure that Kara Swisher probably could get Andy Jassy on the phone, and they are still all on Amazon. So I'm not sure that that's the case, which leads to my second point. All of these AI tools have one goal, which is to eliminate friction, right? They are making it easier to do a thing. All of the things that it's doing right now can be done by humans and computers as we all exist today. They're just making it faster and easier. That's not always a good thing. I think that people who are listing things for sale on Amazon, it should not be this easy, because Amazon is already a wasteland of crap. Like, come on. We do not need to make it any easier for people to list alphabet soup,
that's true,
you know, dongles and charging cords and just all of the things. I mean, there are already, like, it was what, 4 or 5 weeks ago, a couple months ago, when the story was like all of these randomly generated products that were on there. And like, the way you knew it is because The Verge had a huge story on this where it was like, you go into the description and in the description it would say this, you know, I'm a large language model, so I'm not able to do this. Like, wait, what?
Oh, right.
I don't think we need to be making it any easier. If you are selling something on Amazon, you can take the time to upload the photos and to write the description. Like, I don't know. I'm not saying this is end of the world kind of thing. I'm just saying we don't always need to eliminate all the friction because sometimes bad things happen.
That's a good point. I would not want to have been in an era where Craigslist allowed it AI generated listings.
I'm just hopeful that the large language models did not ingest Craigslist as one of their sources of content.
I do not want that. All right. I want to get to a personal tech, which is EVs and whether or not we pre-ordered a Rivian R2. But real quick, the Oscars were last week on Sunday. Oppenheimer took home Best Picture. Robert Downey Jr. got his first Oscar ever for a supporting actor for Oppenheimer. I thought that was pretty fun. But here's Steven Spielberg taking a picture. Okay, wait a minute. First of all, what is it with In-N-Out and famous people? I've seen pictures of Paul Giamatti eating at a In-N-Out after an award show. Steven Spielberg is now taking pictures of his In-N-Out burger in like a tux. What is it just because it's In-N-Out in California?
Well, have you ever had In-N-Out burger?
I have.
Okay. So, I mean, it has a cult following. I don't know why Steven Spielberg, who is one of the most acclaimed directors and is a billionaire, thinks he needs to take a photo of it. Like, I don't really understand that. I go to In-N-Out Burger and I get really excited if I go to California, but I don't take photos anymore. Like, it's not, this guy can literally have it for every meal, every single day. Like, he could just buy In-N-Out probably, but I don't know why, but that wasn't the point of this. The point was, I think, the case, I can't help you.
The case is he has a fun. Have you had Five Guys?
Oh yeah, we have Five Guys around here. Yep.
What would you put, In-N-Out or Five Guys?
Ooh, so probably just because, well, not just because, but I would probably go for In-N-Out mostly because there's a Five Guys a couple miles from our house, so I could get that anytime. So it doesn't feel quite as...
No, but objectively, if you can only either have Five Guys or In-N-Out if you ever go out for a burger for the rest of your life, which would you choose?
I would probably pick In-N-Out, but I like Five Guys fries better. So can I go to both?
They're better.
Can I go to both?
They're better.
Yeah.
No, well, I mean, I don't know. I'm going to say I would go with Five Guys. Mm. I find In-N-Out burgers to be overhyped.
Listen, though.
Exhibit A.
Well, they are pretty hyped up in this photo of Steven Spielberg taking a picture of them. But that picture is going to win an Oscar. But the problem with Five Guys is that you can get a cheeseburger and a Coke and it costs you $35.
It is expensive. So unnecessarily so, I think. Yeah. Anyway, so this is Steven Spielberg, acclaimed director, taking a picture of his In-N-Out burger, excuse me, with his iPhone, assumingly 15 Pro, with a fine woven case. And this case looks nasty. Yeah. This case looks rough.
It looks like he used it to make the cheeseburger on. Like, he set it down as like a cutting board and he just assembled the cheeseburger on top of it.
I don't know how, like, I do think that there's probably a through line of people like who buy all the new iPhone, like famous people, celebrities, like they're just going to buy the Apple product. Like, they're not going on Amazon to buy a third party case. They're not going to Nomad. Like, they're just going to buy all Apple down the line. They're going to buy the Apple phone and the Apple case. And so the choice for people who do that now, it's either silicone or fine woven. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't see Steven Spielberg using a silicone iPhone case. I like the silicone cases. I think they're great cases. I just think Steven Spielberg, he wants the premium case. He's Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
He can do that. And so he would go fine woven. And after, I don't know, what? 7 months of use, 5-6 months of use. It just looks pretty rough.
Yeah. My fine woven case looks great, but that's because I haven't used it in 6 months. So
let's make a prediction, Jason. iPhone 16 event. Okay. Is Apple going to release fine woven V2 and talk about how it's way more durable and better? Or I know they're not going to go back to bovine leather because they have this whole sustainability thing. They could just go vegan leather.
Yeah.
Like a vegan leather.
Yeah, the problem is vegan leather is plastic, right? Like, most vegan leather is plastic. Oh. So that's, I think.
What about cactus leather?
I don't know what that is. Sounds painful.
Because actually,
I do not want an iPhone case with cactus on it. I'm sorry, but you can't fit that in your pocket. There's no way.
No, listen.
Come on. This is the worst idea ever.
You got to be sold out. I have in Ondar the white or Blanc Aspen case is white cactus leather. And I really like the case. It's a nice case. It feels leather-like. It doesn't feel exactly like leather or smell like leather because it's cactus leather, but it's high quality. Like, and I use the case a lot. I like it. They could do that.
Maybe, but it, no? I feel like all those, every word you just said, you just made up. I don't even know what any of them meant. It's just like, well, but word. To answer your question,
what do you think?
I think that what they will do is come up with a new version of Finewoven. I do not think that that's what they should do, but that is what Apple will probably do because they were already working on the second version and before they released the first version, and maybe they'll incorporate some changes. The problem with Finewoven is it's fabric. It's fabric. Like, it's you fabric. Do not want a fabric case. It's, you know, I have a nice pair of headphones right here and they have like a fabric-y material, but you know what? I don't spill things on that. I don't set it, you know, I don't like, it doesn't come in counter.
It's got to be a messy, yeah. If you're getting stuff on your headphones, that's a messy.
If that's the case, if I'm getting something on my headphones, it's because like somebody tried to stick gum in my, I don't understand. Like there's no, I don't think fabric belongs on a phone case. I just don't.
Look at this case, Jason.
Yeah.
Cactus leather. White Ondar, and it's a nice case.
Yeah,
I'm just saying
that looks great. I don't know what cactus leather is, but it looks really good. It's just, is it made out of cactuses?
I don't know.
Is this just a phrase they made up so that they can like it's a marketing term? But that's fine. It looks great. I mean, yes, buy that one. Yeah, I mean, I will highly recommend that to anyone who doesn't want Finewoven. There are a billion cases. Like I also personally, I mean, I have a Nomad Horween leather case. It's wonderful. I don't like leather is actually nice. I understand that makes me an enemy of the earth. I don't buy that many leather things. I don't have leather pants. I don't do like none of that stuff. I'm just saying it's like it is. There's a reason that it's being used for so many products. It's very durable. It lasts a long time and it looks better the more that it ages, unlike Steven Spielberg's mayonnaise smeared fine woven case.
I'm going to put self-servingly my video where I review all, like pretty much the top leather cases. It's part of it. John Gruber actually linked to one of my leather cases.
Oh, you got fireballed.
Speaking of group.
There you go.
I got fireballed. So that video did do well. But anyway, I'll link to this video. There's a lot of great leather cases out there from third parties. You can get the bovine leather if you
want.
So I'll put that out there. All right, real quick, personal tech.
Yeah.
The Rivian had an event.
Yeah.
And the R2, the R3, and the R3X. Which look like very cool cars. They look very cool. I see a couple Rivians around New Tampa where I am, and a lot of hype. I watched MKBHD's video on it, and you were like, "How have you not reserved one of these yet?"
Yeah, you were talking about something about replacing your hamster mobile, and I thought, if you don't have a deposit on an R2 already, I don't know what's wrong with you. So, and honestly, watching this event, the thing that just pained me the most is that's the company Apple should have bought. Right. Remember the photo you and I looked at last week of what the Apple car was supposed to look like? And it was it was like a Tic Tac with wheels. It was ridiculous. This is what Apple should have been making. And really the R3 and the R3X are just, they're fantastic. But this car is for Rivian. The reason it's important is it's like starts at $45,000 instead of $75,000. So I think they've tapped out the market of people who are willing to spend close to $100,000 on a vehicle. Cause once you do some of the upgrades, these are not cheap cars, but the R2 starts at $45,000. They're not going to deliver them until, what does it say? 2026 or whatever.
2026.
So you have to wait a little while, but like, you know, if you can keep that hamster mobile running a little bit longer, I mean, I introduced my 9-year-old to Flintstones yesterday because for some reason he had heard about it and wanted to know. And his most fascinating part was the way they drive the cars with their feet, you know, going underneath of them. So, I mean, if you can keep the hamster mobile going a little bit longer, Flintstone style, this is absolutely the vehicle that people should buy. They're going to sell, especially the R3, which won't come out until after they've started delivering these. They're going to sell as many of those as they can make. Absolutely.
Yeah. The R3, again, I watched MKBHD's video on it. The R3 is like close to like kind of a hatchback style, smaller.
Yeah, it's a crossover. Yep.
It's a crossover. I imagine it'll be even cheaper than the R2. So it might come down to like 40, 35, maybe even. I did do the thing. The $100 reservation fee is refundable.
Yep.
So you can't just reserve one of these for $100. $100 is refundable in 2 years or whatever if you decide not to get it. 2 years is a long time. And I was like, all right, I'll do it. So as soon as you texted me that, I reserved
mine. Oh, I'm so happy.
So I have an R2 reserved.
R2 reserved. You're officially a YouTuber now. You're officially a tech YouTuber. You have a deposit on a Rivian.
So I was on social media and I was like, well, I would love to work with an EV brand today. I'll review whatever car you want. I'll take that Fisk car that MKBHD is the worst car he's ever reviewed. I'll try that. I think, tell me if this is a good idea, Jason. I think this would be funny. And if listeners are still listening at this point in the episode, you can get a sneak peek. I thought about doing like a car review video of my 2011 Kia Soul in the style of MKBHD. Like just reviewing the hamster mobile and the 212,000 miles that I put on it. Would that be funny? Like in a funny way.
Do I think it's a good idea? No. Do I think you should do it? Absolutely. Cause it would be hilarious. I think it would be so good.
I'm going to do it
in the style of Doug DeMuro and do like the quirks and features of a 12 year old car.
I think I'm going to do it. I think it'd be funny. Listeners, let me know if I should do it. I think I will. This looks like an amazing car. Of course I want it. No CarPlay, which everyone argues about, but you drive a car that doesn't have CarPlay. Do you miss it?
No. It's fine because I don't like Tesla, their software's fine. It's good. Like I don't love that they change things on me occasionally and you lose, like you have to re-put buttons in places again, but I have a Tesla that actually has physical controls because mine's a little older, so I don't have to use the screen for as many things. Tesla's software interface is great. It's better than any other car manufacturer's. It's not better than CarPlay necessarily, but it is like fine. I don't miss having CarPlay in that car. In the Rivian is the same thing. Rivian, there's literally only two companies that know how to make software for cars, Rivian and Tesla. Like seriously, like it's true. Everybody else, garbage.
Yeah. Look at this tent too. Yep. This tent that goes on top of the R2. That looks very cool.
Yeah.
That looks very cool.
Yeah.
I give you that. Anyway, there was that unfortunate story of a woman who passed away in the Tesla because it fell in the water and she couldn't get the door open, which, you know, people probably unhelpfully are like, there's a manual way to open the door. This is why you need to read the manual. And it's like, yeah, okay, well.
Well, the problem is that she accidentally put the car into reverse instead of forward. And she apparently had told people that this has happened to her many times. I don't know which version she was driving, but there are several where it's like a swiping motion with your hand on either on the screen or like a motion sensor as opposed to like I have a physical stalk that I can adjust where I'm going. So like it is. Right. There's a reason that cars have certain controls and taking them away doesn't make them better. The last thing I wanted to say about the R2 is the reason I think that this car is going to be amazing is I think that the best in the R3 as well, the best crossover electric that was made right now is the Polestar, like the Polestar version 3. I think it's an amazing car, but it's $79,000. So just compare that to being able to buy like the R3 if it comes in at like $37,000 or something like that, or the R2, which is a little bit bigger than the Polestar 3. But just when you compare those things, and I've driven, actually the fun thing is if you go to San Francisco and you rent a car from Hertz, it's probably going to be a Polestar. They have about 100, like every Polestar that's ever been sold, I think is on the Hertz lot in San Francisco's airport. And they're great to drive. Wow. They have CarPlay. So like that's amazing. But the nice thing about it is if you get the Rivian, you can save yourself about $40,000. So there you go.
See, there's also, I feel like this is maybe what Craig Federighi drives, the Lucid Air.
Yes.
This is the Lucid Air. Starts at $74,000. The sunroof on these look wild, but then this is the Polestar.
Yes.
Polestar 3 also starts at $70,000.
Yeah, and Polestar does make a sedan. There's the Polestar 1 and the Polestar 2. One is fully electric, one is a hybrid. The Polestar 1, I think it is actually really rare. It's really hard to find them. It was actually a hybrid vehicle. The Polestar 2 is a sedan. The Lucid, I was at Lucid's launch event, and this is it. I was actually surprised to see that you can get one now for $75,000 because when I was at the launch event for Lucid, the lowest priced model was $150,000. And so they have come down. And people, the Lucid, their advantage is they charge really quickly and they have very, very long range. They have the best battery technology basically of any of the electric vehicles, and they were their CEO was the person who designed the Model S, and it's like he left and he's like, we're gonna just do all the things better that Tesla didn't do with the vehicle. And so like they have some real chops. They just haven't been able to sell enough of them, maybe because they were $150,000 to like be sustainable. But Lucid, absolutely, like if they can start turning these things out in volume, they're making a great vehicle. They have an SUV. It's kind of ridiculous because I think it is like $200,000 or something like that, or they're working on one. But anyway, I just the Lucids are great. All of them are great. Yeah. But the thing that's great is now you can buy a very good electric vehicle for less than $50,000, which is the thing that Rivian had to do if they were going to make it, basically.
Right. I'm excited for Rivian. I'm excited to maybe I'll get one in 2 years. I'm excited for them to sponsor the show and give us some demo cars.
Listen, I've tried to, I couldn't even, I'm not going to get into it, but this is one thing people noticed, and this was a thing that was going around. People were noticing that in a lot of the photos, so the Rivians charge in the front, the R1S and the R1T,
right.
But the R2 and the R3 have their charging port in the back, and people are like, well, that's really weird. The reason why is they have NACS ports on them, which is the Tesla charger port,
right.
And the Tesla superchargers, you back in, right? So they are standardizing this. I'm assuming that most of the electric vehicles we start to see going forward are going to have the ports moved to the back so that you can back into a supercharger until you can park it. But that's great, because that means that the R2 is going to have the NACS charging standard built in. You won't need an adapter. You'll be able to go to any supercharger in America and use it in charge this vehicle without having to worry about compatibility. So
that's really cool. Well, I reserve mine. Two years from now, we'll see. We'll review
it. I promise you, you'll use it more often than the Apple Vision Pro.
Listen, I've not used it in over a week. I'll be honest.
Okay, so next week, here's the thing. Next week, we have to do a semi-long-term review of the Vision Pro and a semi-long-term review of the MacBook Air that I've been carrying around with me, the M3.
Oh, that's good. So, all right, that's good. I'll have to make a note about that in a second. Okay, so anyway, we're going to go to bonus episode. Jason went to South by Southwest. He interviewed Delta's CEO, so I want to hear about his experience down in Austin, Texas. If you want to hear that bonus episode, again, support the show, Apple Podcast. Go to primarytech.fm. You can support us through Memberful there. Get access to all the back catalog of bonus episodes. We have a great one on physical media. We have a great bonus episodes. I forget all we talked about. But anyway, they're all there.
You can listen to all good. We can't pick our favorite child. Come on.
Exactly. We should check that out. We're going to go record now. Again, 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcasts. If you haven't, subscribe to youtube.com/@primarytechshow. All those links are in the show notes. Thanks again for listening and watching. We'll catch you next week.